Welcome, change-minded listeners, to episode 51 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, the podcast that shifts paradigms across all generations. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And in tonight's episode, we'll be discussing possible changes to the way games will be made as we move into the next generation of gaming. But before we get to that, let's kick things off with our weekly geekly or geekly weekly roundup, depending on who you ask. Why don't you go first, Brian? What have you been up to in the past week?
I played Star Wars Edge of the Empire beginner set again. Our normal hangout, Friday night hangout, picked up some new people, and they weren't up to speed, so we just tossed it out and started over. That was fun. New character. We got to do some things that we maybe goofed the first time. A lot less bloodshed this time around. And I feel a little bad. I actually cheated a little bit. I metagamed because I really wanted to do something differently, but no one picked up on it. So I just cheated and like, oh no, go talk to the robot, because I thought that robot angle was really cool. I think that's the first time I've ever done that. I don't know how to feel.
Good would be my default response, whether or not you really should feel it or not. I'm just very positive.
Rick, your opinions.
Spoiler alert for those who haven't played.
Spoiler alert for an RPG. That feels wow, yeah, you're right.
Oh, well, it is a beginner campaign, is it not?
Yeah, but anyone that's going to be at Tate's trying it out for the first time on the 4th, this isn't being posted until after that, so we're safe.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I've had, for my part, I'll just say that I've had fun GMing a few sessions with two different groups of people now. It's been good times. Very halting episode tonight.
I was still waiting for Rick to actually give me his opinion. Sorry. I guess as long as it didn't piss anybody off, I guess the new people didn't even know it existed, so it couldn't have been too bad.
If you didn't do it, I was going to do it. So.
Oh, okay. See, now I feel much better. And that was it. That was a short week for me.
Cool. How about you, Ricky? What have you been up to?
I took place in the replaying of the Edge of the Empire, and being a full-time noob, it was cool to see how even a game that's quote-unquote on rails, you know, we're kind of being led through the very initial stages of learning how to play the game. I was surprised at how different it was, so that was pretty cool. Different outcomes, not just based on roles, but even, you know, new people's input and decisions were on the different situations had a completely different outcome. So that was kind of cool to see that. And then the rest of my weekend, man, all's I did, I was stuck on the Xbox for probably the 97% of the rest of the weekend. And all I did was play Terraria.
Like, wow.
I couldn't stop playing, man. I mean, hours and hours and hours of my life just flying by. And then I'm totally losing track of time. I'm like, oh, cool. Such and such is on in 15 minutes. I'm just going to finish this up real quick. Next thing you know, it's 4.5 hours later, and I'm like, what? So then I'm like, well, all right, I'll just wrap it up in another 20 minutes. Then another 3.5 hours later, what? My whole weekend was sucked away by playing this game. I could not stop. It was awesome.
I don't know whether to check that game out or, as is always the case whenever my friends get addicted to games, maybe like steer clear, because do I need the addiction? Maybe, maybe not.
It's weird, man. It's a lot like Minecraft, which I was completely addicted to that. But then they did like an update and none of my mods worked. Plus, I have to sit on my computer and play it, which I don't really love so much. So the fact that I can play Terraria sitting on the couch with my controller. I mean, granted, I can play Minecraft there as well. But having played it on the computer, I see the differences in interface and stuff like that. So I see the shortcomings of the Xbox version. But as far as Terraria goes, even PC people are like, yeah, it's pretty much a an apples to apples comparison. So I'm not missing out on anything. I get to hang on the couch with the dog and all the cats and beautiful comfort of my nice leather reclining couch with my gigantic screen TV and just fucking mine away till my mind is numb, and I love it.
Nice. Sounds like a worthwhile pastime for sure.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did break away for a little while because I was starting to go numb, dude. And me and Kimberly went over to GXE on Saturday night for a few hours and got in a starter game of Leviathans.
Whoa. You guys just broke out your set and went for it?
Yep. I figured I don't read rules, and she loves reading, so as on a whim, as a joke, I was like, hey, why don't we go over to GXE and play some... No, actually, I said, why don't we play Leviathans? She's like, okay. I'm like, why don't we go play at GXE? She's like, okay, let's go. I was like, what? All right, let's go. So it took a long time to get up and running just because we had to kind of read rules and get clarified and stuff like that. But gameplay itself was really fun. We ended up being there for a lot longer than we wanted to be, but the game was so fun, it just kind of like time flew by. So looking forward to getting you guys on board with that game because it's pretty badass.
That one picture you posted pretty much got me on board with playing that, so your job won't be difficult.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a lot like playing Star Wars X-Wing, but different at the same time. That was it.
Cool. I said cool twice. Now, that brings things over to me. I have, of course, been playing more of the excellent Ni No Kuni. Can't say enough about it. I just got to the part now where I basically get to collect them all. That is, all the little critters that you serenade into your service so that you can use them in battle. And you can level them up, feed them, etc. So it is very much a Pokemon-like element to the game that has just opened up for me, in addition to the already really good just traditional RPG aspects of it. The game continues to impress. So I recommend that. I also, of course, you know, played with you guys. I was a little worried about how introducing new players sort of on a... with very little notice would play out, but thankfully you guys were gracious and made them feel welcome, and they were extremely happy with the warm welcome that the Nerdstravaganza crew gave them when we played. So pat yourselves on the back for that. You're good. You're good players. People want to play with you.
Tap tap.
I also went last week to the theater showing of the Star Trek episode where Jean-Luc Picard becomes Locutus of Borg. I believe the title is The Best of Both Worlds. They put both episodes together as one long episode and preceded it with like some pretty cool interviews with the different actors and so on. And that was awesome. That actually really stands out as an excellent pair of episodes. The first one where he becomes Locutus being the better of the two, but that was a pretty cool theater experience.
They did that back in November, but we missed it. I think I was in Disney World or something.
Well, that's a good reason to have missed it. But if it should happen to appear again, I recommend it if you're a Star Trek fan, or if you're a Borg fan, or if you're a Patrick Stewart fan, sci-fi fan in general. And of course, they also were shilling for the Blu-ray release of season, I think, 4 of the Star Trek series in HD. And I really don't want to spend the money to own those, but I really, at the same time, want to own those. So I may part with some cash pretty soon for that. We'll see.
You had a little pirate there in your voice. Why don't you just do that?
Did I sound piratey just now, or...? Did I?
Really?
I really.
No, that's my thievery twist on it.
I like it. I am a thief, after all. No, I'm not. But we do draw inspiration here on the Nerdstravaganza podcast, do we not, Rick? And I think your ability to draw inspiration from articles you come across is solely responsible for our excellent show topic tonight. Would you care to elaborate?
Well, if there's one thing me and Tom are known for, that's hating stuff. So, I came across an article today called 10 Game Design Choices That Need to Change Before the Release of the PS4 and Xbox 720, if in fact that's even what it's going to be called.
Mm.
And this was kind of a top 10, I guess, I think it was generated from a poll, but I can't be 100% sure. But it was from GamingBolt.com. And I thought it was a pretty good list, and I thought it would be something akin to our Maxim Awards and some of the other top 10 lists that we've kind of tackled. Rather than coming up with our own, we kind of criticize, critique, or agree with somebody else's list. So half of our work is done for us, and we can just lend our grief, charm, and aggravation to their current list, and makes our jobs easier and funnier.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And Brian has been dragged into this, neither kicking nor screaming nor protesting. I think that you're on board, right?
I'm actually pretty cool with it. I think, especially with our track record for shit happening at the minute after we say it, I think discussing the positive future of gaming could be fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Hopefully at least 5 out of these 10 catch on.
Yeah, yeah. Like the way that they decided to put a big dome on Epcot after we suggested it. That's really bitchin'. So to use that 80s term, bitchin'. And so hopefully some of these come to be as a result of this conversation.
I don't really think these are in any particular order. So do we want to go 1 to 10 or 10 to 1?
Hmm. Yeah, it's not like the 10 is the big like crescendo or anything. We can do reverse order. We can go freestyle, do reverse order if you want, Rick.
Either one works for me.
All right, let's do 10 to 1. I like that. So, do you want to kick it off, Rick? What's the number 10?
Number 10 is cutscenes that you cannot skip or pause.
I love cutscenes that I cannot skip or pause, so I disagree with this. No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say, I wholeheartedly agree with this. I think I probably miss out on stuff because I don't have any patience. I just mash the A button to pass stuff. So I would maybe throw in the exception of the first time it's there or if it's pertinent to the story. Because I do it on instructions a lot. And I don't realize that there was going to be instructions there, so I screw myself. Mm. So I would put the caveat in there that if it's due to instructions or extremely crucial to storyline, or if it's simply the first time you watch it, you have to watch it. But any time after that, it knows, and then you can skip past it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the Rick fix of the day.
I'm with you. I mean, I'd even go so far as to, you know what, it's your video game. If you want to skip all the awesome, storytelling that we've woven into it, go for it. And if you miss shit in the process, so be it. I personally like the cinematic aspects of games, so I like to sit through. I like cutscenes if they're good, and I like to sit through them. But if it's precedes me getting my butt handed to me by some kind of a boss or whatever, or enemy, yeah, I just want to get right through that and get back into the fight. So that there should be a skip option, even with the restriction that they want you to sit through it once, maybe being acceptable. But you know what? I'm a big boy. It should be my choice.
I would like a skip option. I do not understand how there is no pause option. That just upsets me.
Mm.
Because like Rick was saying, sometimes you skip and you miss stuff. Well, sometimes I drop my soda and miss something and it's gone forever. You can't just pause it. You, whatever happens, happens, and it's gone and you don't know. And
yep.
Actually,
that's bad customer service.
I kind of glossed right over the pause, but you make, yeah, that's bad customer service. That's no way to do business, to quote a famous movie called Dungeons and Dragons. That's true. Sometimes I just cleared a level and I really want to see the great movie, but I got to pee.
Or you got a cat that decides he wants to do a Halloween cat statue in front of you, and then you can't see what the hell's going on. And as you're trying to push him out of the way, 6 more cats jump up on your lap wondering what the hell's going on. And then you drop the controller and spill your soda. So yeah, pause, please.
And have like a you know, a replay queue. You know, my reward for clearing the level is I can go back to the movie player and replay any of the scenes I might have missed.
I have seen that in some games. I think that's cool. I do like that.
Should be a standard feature.
Should be.
Cool. So we agree with them on number 10, I think.
Yep.
All right. Brian, you want to grab number 9?
I will. Irrelevant QuickTime events. And I just despise those.
Mm.
I just despise press A to win the game. That's just ridiculous. Or the what was it? Was it God of War that did it first? Press A not to die horribly.
Yeah, yeah. Or basically play a rhythm game on your controller to beat, you know, the enemy. Yeah.
Seems annoying.
Kind of is. Like, I guess it was maybe... You could look at it as a remedy to, like, cutscenes. Like, we'll make them interactive cutscenes. But, I mean, I kind of liked it in Dragon's Lair. Which is basically what was one big QuickTime event, I guess. But the novelty's worn off, man.
Bad design through and through. Shouldn't be done. Nix. So far, we're 2 for 2 on this list.
I think so. Guess I'll take number 8. Patronizing dialogue. Patronizing from the standpoint that it's written for a ninth grader, written by ninth graders. Hold your hand to the extent that it's insulting. Like, they don't let you infer anything, maybe. You know, what do they mean? What do they mean here? Without delving too much into their explanation, any of those ring a bell? Or, you know, ring your bell as far as being classified as patronizing dialogue?
I can't think of any that are intended to be patronizing. I can think of some that come across that way, but I usually just blame the god-awful voice talent.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that's exactly what I was going to say. Sometimes it could be saved by better acting, but then again, sometimes the voice acting's not that bad, and it really is just shitty written dialogue.
Final Fantasy 13 was guilty of repetitive and, I guess, patronizing dialogue in that one of the main characters was her essence was captured in this crystal that the man who loved her carried with him. So it wasn't enough to have him glancing at it in moments of despair or, like, to just occasionally have it glimmer. Like, every other cutscene, he was pulling it out. And her name was Sarah. I'll never forget this. And Sarah agrees, too, and, like, holding the crystal aloft and, like, all right, we get it, man. We get it. She's, like, your muse, your inspiration.
That is a perfect example, dude.
For Sarah, I'll do it. And, like, gripping the crystal, like, oh, yeah, perfect example, actually.
And then you've got the other side of the coin. I don't know if it's actually the other side of the coin, but you've got the other example, which is a throwback to, like, the 1960s Batman TV show, where they just, like, retard explain everything to you over and over again. We're going to take this rock and throw it at precisely a 45 degree angle at 3 miles an hour, and that will take out the boss, won't it? That's right. If we do take that rock right there and throw it at a 45 degree angle at 3 miles an hour, it will take out that boss right there.
That's what I consider patronizing, when they fill in, like, stuff that everybody smarter than a, you know, chimpanzee would be able to infer.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, the first time, if it needs to be glossed over at the beginning of the game for instructions or whatever. But, yeah, the constant reminder. I'm like, really? I've got 20 hours in this fucking game and you're still screaming that patronizing bullshit at me?
Remember, if you're sniping, you have to be sneaky.
Exactly.
No shit. At this point, I don't get that concept.
Thinking about it that way, there has been things that have pissed me off. What was the was it Tales of Vesperia? Tales, the PlayStation 3 exclusive turn-based strategy game that was set in a phony World War II.
Oh, that was Valkyria Chronicles.
Valkyria Chronicles, when the tank with the massive armor in front of it rolled up to you and one of your guys was stationed off to the side and they were like, you should sneak around behind it and shoot it in its rear unarmored engine. And I was like, no shit, don't shoot it in the 18-inch thick metal plate on the front? Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example, Brian. God. It was obviously... There you go. Something that should have been inferred, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I kind of think that maybe if you can't infer that, you shouldn't be playing that type of game.
Yeah.
You should still be doing, like, you know, Reading Rainbow or something.
Geordi, speaking of Star Trek and Reading Rainbow.
Sad thing is, though, is when I'm learning a game, and people used to shit on Grant for doing this all the time, when he would play War Machine, he would kind of announce every single thing he was doing. Okay, I'm going to roll the dice. I need to get a mat this to your rat that, whatever. Throw the dice out, count it up. Okay, I'm going to move this long gunner over here. That is 6 inches. So I do it in real life. I was doing it when we were playing Leviathans, and it was driving fucking Kim mental. And I'm like, dude, it's the only way I can learn.
That's kind of an openness thing too. I think people do that to seem forthcoming in case anyone thinks, oh wait, did you say 6 or 8 inches? You know?
Like, yeah. So to me, it's funny that it's something that really irritates me in a game, but then I go ahead and do it in real life gaming. So. All right, we're 3 for 3. What do we got at number 7?
Well, it's your turn again, Ricky. Why don't you let us know what we got at number 7?
Social media integration.
Love it. Live it.
Brian?
I hate it. I don't like social media integration at all. I don't like social media very much at all. So I don't want my technology, my gaming systems, my machines, like, reporting what I do to people that I don't report what I do to.
I like the ability of it.
Well said.
But like it says in their article, maybe it's just me, but if I'm really so excited about any of my gaming related achievements, I'll post them myself on Facebook or Twitter. But the automatic thing, I haven't seen that, and I don't know, I don't believe I would like that. But I do like when I review my achievements on Xbox, it gives me the ability to share and add a message. So automatic integration, I wouldn't be a fan of. Having the ability to do it on my own, I really like, but I think it should be console-based, not game-based. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you like optional, like what you like manual push social media integration,
yes,
let's call
yes,
it. Okay.
Yes. I really just do it for myself. And I just because it's like, hey, let me put it out there. My friends aren't in the room. Like back in the day, you'd have your buddies right there next to you and you're like, yes, you fucking did it. And then everybody's talking about it on the playground the next day at school or at the cafeteria munching on a bologna sandwich. Dude, you should have saw Tom killing that thing last night. But now we don't have that, so it's a measly sticker achievement push up to Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, my only experience with it is I have the automatic thing turned on PlayStation 3 whenever I get a trophy or whatever, and then go in and view my trophies, it updates.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten like maybe one thumbs up. So if there's any social reward to be had, I have not experienced it to any great degree. Brian can attest to this. On the Wii U, I have that feature turned on for the Mario Brothers game. And it's kind of cool because it shares it within the Wii U community. Like you can leave a little tag like leaving tips for how to get past a tough part and so on. But it pops up like way too much. Like you've died 3 times. Do you want to tell people about it? No. No, I don't. I just want to keep going.
I can attest that you have it turned on and talk about turning it off every time it pops up.
But, you know, I think that someday I will, like actually sometimes when I clear a tough level or find a missing coin, I do leave and I tag it as a spoiler. I'll leave a tip for the next player. But, God, I don't want, like, if I'm dying 4 times in a row, I'm already frustrated. Don't interrupt me with a message. Just get me back in the game.
It's back to cutscenes. You got to wait for the cutscene
before
you can fight again. And then, and before you get the cutscene, you got to answer yes or no. Do you want to post this?
Exactly. Exactly.
Double aggravation.
I'll just say that where I see social media integration maybe being cool is if I get a really sweet kill or I do something really cool or funny in a game and it's buffering a couple minutes of gameplay at a time, and I can just grab that last 30 seconds and post that up. Hey, this happened. This was funny. That might be kind of cool, like instant YouTubing. Right. So, I'm a mixed bag on social media integration. If it's done right, it can be a good feature, but it can definitely also be annoying. So I'm kind of neither thumbs it up nor down on this one.
If we were going to go, maybe the next generation systems can do it right, because sharing kill cams instantly and sharing just like zany happenings, like I've seen some YouTube videos that people fraps or whatever. I'd like that to be easier and more integrated, but I don't like the way it is right now. So maybe they can keep that around and just evolve it. But I don't trust them to.
So you're kind of a thumbs down on it?
Yeah.
And you, Rick?
If it's non-automatic, I like it.
Okay.
But I agree, it could be better. And being able to share better stuff like, screenshots or movie clips and stuff like that would be awesome.
Okay. So we think there could be change here.
Yeah.
And Brian's very skeptical that could be done. Okay.
So that's one that doesn't have to go away for next gen, but if it's going to stick around, please make it better.
Yeah. Yeah. And please let it be me driven.
Yes.
That takes us over to number 6, and I think your turn again, Brian.
Experience in online modes. And I can't think of any game that does this well. So maybe you guys have a little bit of more multiplayer experience than I do. But I never understood why in a first-person shooter, which is 99% skill-based, you needed to be graded. I'm level 5! Just because you had played long.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's weird.
And it's weirdly demoralizing, too. When I rush home from work 2 hours after a game releases, pick up the game, rush home to play it, and people are already level 99, I don't fucking want to play against them.
Well, but in theory, you shouldn't, right? It's not going to pair you with the 99 people, the level 99 guys, right? I mean, if they have any kind of balancing.
I see them in rooms and see them in games. I maybe it shouldn't be, or maybe it's just because not enough people are doing it yet, or I don't know.
I don't know. I like the concept of like the games not being the matches not being throwaway, and like there's character development that comes with them. But I also it can be a little intimidating when you go online and every 13-year-old who's been playing the game all day is like level 99 already. I don't know. I think they need to be a little more selective about when they implement experience. That my answer is going to be a cautious keep this feature, but yeah, fix it.
Yeah, I don't really play a lot of games that require it, but I'm definitely on Brian's side of the fence with this one. There's nothing more aggravating, than getting into a game. Like he brought up the example of when a game first comes out. Well, I'm like Johnny come lately, because I'd rather buy a game used or buy it after it goes on its first sale. I'm not sitting there at midnight buying it and being disappointed again. Thank you, Steel Battalion. But
finally, that game was good for something.
To try to go on and play, it's like you're instantly ostracized. Because you don't have a big enough score, or I don't know. I think it's good if it's just for online modes. I don't agree at all. Offline modes, I agree, because you got to get better at the game to open up different stuff. So,
kill it. I don't understand where it ever came from. That was
okay.
That was a bad idea. Run amok.
Yeah, I should have inferred that from your initial salvo. Sorry. All right, I think.
Skip ahead to number 4, because I think number 4 ties in with number 6 pretty well.
Okay, so we're maybe cautiously leaving XP in for some games, but not feeling too great about it, it doesn't sound like. And
well, that's in online modes. They're talking about online modes.
Right, in online modes. Right. Which brings us to number four. I guess it's my turn. I will grab a hold of number four. That is online passes. So something like a season pass where you're basically... Or just basically DLC. Basically, you're buying content, you're buying access in addition to what comes with the game, right? That's the way I'm reading this.
That's what it looks like.
I don't mind DLC that continues the story, that adds more missions or expands the world in some way. I do mind, like... just basically like prestige DLC, like I have the golden gun and I get to play as the, you know, cool robot and I get to do that. I don't like that kind of online, you know, paid content. I feel like I really feel like they start off like with a certain scope for the game and it gets trimmed back based on what they figure they can sell for extra. That's my two cents on that.
I see this as created by used video game sales and this industry need to address the problem before it becomes a real problem. And I think this is just passing along the cost of used game sales to the guy who buys new games, and I don't like that.
Passing it on in what way?
Well, let's just say Borderlands 2, for instance. Borderlands 2 is $60.
Mm.
If you buy it new, it's $60, and you get X content. If you want X plus Y content, you have to pay $90. So if you want the full game, it's $90.
But then I can come in and get the game for $15 on sale.
Yes.
And okay. Buy the pass... and only pay $45 for the game. So the $25-$30 that you didn't pay, I fucking paid.
So you think that there should be some incentive, some more beneficial pricing if you bought a brand new copy?
Well, I think they need to, let's be honest, all of the stuff that came out for Borderlands, it's awesome. It shouldn't have been DLC. It should have been included on the disc.
Ooh, and that's how I was going to chime in. Not with that exact example because I haven't played that game, but if you're putting out a full game, then the game is worth a full price. If you're putting out half a game and expecting to make up money by putting out DLC, then the original game should not cost full price.
Right. Charge me $40. I'll pay the extra $10. That's palatable. Charge me $39.99 for the new game, $29.99 for the 1 year pass or whatever that you were going to give me for free anyway before all this shit started.
Interesting. I think by bringing up Borderlands, you've got me thinking about how I feel about this. I'm kind of better with additional content if I feel like I've already got my money's worth out of the game. So what you two have both said has really gotten me thinking about a good comparison between Borderlands, which is basically a first-person shooter with some RPG elements, which is fairly, not a short game, but not epic in its scale either, and the Elder Scrolls game called Skyrim, which was just insanely long if you played it to its, you know, to do everything that you could in the game, which I did. I haven't bought any add-on content for that game because I'm still tired from playing through that game initially. And I would feel good about putting money down for downloadable content. I wouldn't feel like I was getting the unfinished chapters of the game. I would feel like they were expanding this already massive game. Whereas with Borderlands, I agree that there could have been more to the core game itself, Brian, but I don't know if the add-on content just kind of feel like one-offs. They kind of feel like the characters are off doing like a little, like a Christmas special or something, right? That's how I feel about Borderlands versus like Skyrim DLC.
using Skyrim as an example, maybe the difference is it actually took them a while to announce DLC for Skyrim, as opposed to Borderlands, where the day I bought the game, they were like, hey, do you want to pay for stuff that's going to come out? You mean the game's not complete?
You're kind of right, yeah. And I guess the point here is online passes is that's what they call this this item in their list. And yeah, that's a little objectionable, isn't it? Like, hey, want the rest of the game? You can buy it right now.
I also the Mechromancer, the other class.
Yeah,
she was available from day one. If you was she a purchase or was she a pre-order.
If you were pre-order,
could purchase.
Yeah. If you were pre-ordered, she came. You got a thing for her, I think.
Okay, but something. If not, from day one, she was available for $10, right?
I think you could buy her as an add-on too. Yeah.
So from day one, like no extra programming, no extra planning, no design down the road, and no, hey, people like thought this would be cool if we expanded the game because they played through it and all. From day one, there were four characters in the class. Four characters in the game, but you could only play them if you paid extra. I don't know. It's just perception, maybe.
Yeah, it really does come down to perception of value. And I feel like in the case of a playable character that was available from day one, that's kind of not cool. My perception is that that's not cool.
Okay, well, perception of value. The DLC that I got for Red Dead Redemption, good deal. The downloadable content we got for L.A. Noire, great deal. Downloadable content I got for Battlefield 2, not so good, because the day that Battlefield 3 came out, which was my own mistake because I bought this other game like 2 weeks before Battlefield 3 came out. Mm. I bought the Vietnam DLC, I got like 1 week of insanely badass gameplay that sucked me in. I wouldn't even be doing this podcast right now. It was so good. And then literally stroke of midnight, crickets on the server, and there's never anybody on there now. So I wasted $15 and it irritated the shit out of me.
So it's fair to say that online content needs to be a positive value proposition for it to, and online passes for them to make sense of the next generation.
Yeah, but what's weird is it seems like on their poll here or whatever, their list, they were in favor of the downloadable content for multiplayer, but not so much in single player. So I don't know if that's the general consensus, because it sure as hell is not my consensus. My vote is for the single player, buying some DLC for that. I find to be a better value, because if you like the game, you're extending the game. You know what I mean? By getting new missions or
yeah.
stuff like that. But that being said, you don't want to fall into the situation like you get, like what Brian was talking about, where they give you half a game and then it's like, it's all secret. It's in there. Just here, give me $15. Here's a code. Boop. Now it's there. Like,
on
that's,
disc
that's
DLC
annoying.
Pisses me off.
Yeah, they're selling it to you. They're just locking it away. Yeah, in principle, I can see why that's offensive. Yeah, online passes in the form of like map packs and stuff really kind of screw up matchmaking for online games too.
Yep.
It's like kind of selling a Monopoly board, but like you don't actually get all of the squares or something. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, like depending on who you buy it from.
Right.
Or if you buy it early enough, then you can get all the squares. If not, you've got to wait 6 months for the squares to come out.
Yeah.
Actually 6 weeks, because 6 months would actually be new content, so that would never happen. But, you know, just real quick, this Brian had brought it up, and it kind of ties in. You guys were talking about pre-order bonuses. I noticed a trend recently that I think is kind of cool, because I was not a fan of pre-order stuff, because, you know, Johnny X gets this badass weapon that you can't get anywhere else, and Johnny Y gets this other badass weapon that you can't get anywhere else, in-game, out-of-game, or whatever. I don't like that type of exclusivity. I liked when I saw I think it was Battlefield, it might have been something else. Either way, they were, I know what it was Steel Battalion. They were offering the same thing with a different skin. So you could pick, like, you know, a different color or a different design, a different kind of motif to go along with it. But you weren't getting something that nobody else could get. You were getting something that was already in the game. You were just getting the Best Buy's version, or you're getting the GameStop version, stuff like that. And I felt that that was a lot more fair. Like, going into the game, everybody was even playing field. But you got to buy from who you wanted to buy based on which design you thought was cooler.
Yeah, they've done that with a couple. I think they did it with Halo 4, too. You got, like, yeah, somebody's color scheming, but it didn't really give you an advantage or anything.
Right, and actually, you know, even in Best Buy and GameStop, they were different. Like, they were a different class of mech that you could get. But, you know, vendors A, B, and C had one kind of mech, and they all had three different color schemes.
Mm.
And then vendor C, D, and E, or D, E, and F had another class of mech, and they had three different color schemes. So you still had multiple options, but you were never going to get screwed out of getting something good in the game. Because I could still get that mech that, if I ordered from GameStop, I could still get the same mech as Best Buy, but it's just not going to have the paint job that the Best Buy one had. So I like that better, because you're not going into a game already feeling defeated or... But, you know,
at a disadvantage, yeah.
At a disadvantage, right.
Did any of the vendors actually sell a mech that worked in that game, or?
That I don't think happened, no.
Oh, bummer. I'm pissed that I have a $60 coaster still. I hate even talking about that game.
I think this is a great story, and I'll take any chance to tell a story. I love that. I think it was... Was it Gears of War or Halo? Which one had the golden gun?
That was Gears of War 2 or something. Yeah.
Gears of War 2. GameStop had a special. When you pre-purchased, you got like a glowing, obnoxious, very recognizable gun for pre-purchasing from GameStop. And what that did, because a lot of people don't really like GameStop, myself included, it made you a huge target, and pretty much the entire online community decided that if they saw someone with that gun, they'd do their damnedest to kill them immediately as punishment for shopping at GameStop. So I'm kind of okay with that. I'm kind of okay with discriminating against GameStop shoppers.
GameStop's been nothing but good to me.
I like GameStop better now, because I view them as an almost underdog. But that's a topic for another show.
All right, so let's move on to number five, which is actually the new number four.
Number five, which is the new number four, and I'm glad you mentioned it, Rick, because I believe in the rotation you are up against, sir.
No local multiplayer.
This is something else that I just don't understand how we got here. Like, I mean, I guess being able to play online is cool, but when did people not want to get together and play with their friends in person?
I'll tell you when, because I am the perfect poster child for that. Fucking split screen. Who started split screen? Nintendo, right?
Yeah.
Like, fucking Nintendo. I hate split screen. Fucking, all I can think of in my head with split screen is Turok. And maybe GoldenEye,
right.
I'm not a fan of the split screen, but, you know, some games, I guess there's no other alternative, and that's where I'm going to throw in my solution to this. I'm okay with no local multiplayer with split screen, but you should include local or private room online play.
To play with just your friends.
Yes, which I love that. And especially having three Xboxes in my own house, I really love that. Because I can play with Kimberly. She's on her box, I am on my box. There's no split screen. There's no annoying, like, she has the volume how she wants it, I have the volume how I want it. Everything's good and golden in multiplayer land.
What about you, Brian? You said that you're wondering how we got away from local multiplayer, you would bring it back in some form, or you'd see it more common?
Link cables and multiple systems, multiple televisions are definitely more fun for me, but I kind of viewed split screen as I don't like it, but it's what it is. Like, I didn't ever really hate it.
Yeah. I think that's the general sentiment. Go ahead.
It was kind of worth it, you know?
Yeah, in a pinch, it's awesome for you and your buddy to hop online together and play a game. Right, like if you happen to have friends that you hang out with in person. I guess the calculus is that that's not as common a scenario as you playing by yourself online, but it's kind of cool to go over a friend's house, and in the article they even mention Halo as an example, being able to play Halo with your friend online against other people. So you're kind of doing cooperative play against other human beings. That's kind of neat. You do have to pay the split screen price for it, but it is still cool. So I don't know. I think I'd like the local multiplayer option to exist more than it does. And they also mentioned, by the way, the Wii U as a prime candidate for this, and I couldn't agree more, because you actually have a functional screen in the Wii remote.
Right.
We'll see if Nintendo are keen enough to embrace that. I suspect they will not be, but I don't know. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it a little more imagination go into local multiplayer and maybe some better implementation.
That's a good argument. Well, Rick brings up a good argument for things that require multiplayer. I'm sorry, things that require split screen. But some of the most fun, like, quote unquote, party games that I've ever played was just multiplayers on one screen. Double Dragon, Poi Poi, Choo Choo Rocket for Dreamcast. Those were boards, basically, and everybody could see all their pieces at one time. And
Contra!
It was just a blast.
Contra.
Yeah,
Contra
on NES.
Was same screen multiplayer.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, cooperative.
Hell
yeah. Yeah.
So I could do away with the split screen if we still had that stuff.
But I'll tell you why they don't do that. Because game design doesn't call for it anymore. All anybody wants to do is... I mean, we went through this before when everything was a goddamn fighting game, which I fucking hate fighting games. And I stopped going to the arcade because everything was a fucking Virtua Fighter knockoff. And right before that, it was 3D driving games. Well, actually, it was right around the same time. So you had two choices. You could either play a fighting game or a driving game. I chose driving games, but that got boring really fast. But then you've gotten into the situation now where everything's a fucking first-person shooter. And then to even make it worse, everything's a fucking zombie first-person shooter.
There have been some pretty decent zombie first-person shooters, but...
I like the Left 4 Dead ones.
Left 4 Dead, that's pretty much what I'm talking about, yeah.
That game's funny as shit.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that, like, first-person perspective 3D doesn't lend itself to multiplayer on the same screen unless you do the compromise of split-screen. So unless we see the return of, like, Ikari Warriors or, you know... like an overhead or a side scroller. I don't know, man. You make a good point. Think multiplayer was better when you could share a screen and have the full experience, but how do you even square that now with 3D?
Well, not everything has to be 3D. I mean, you can make just a great example would be that Pac-Man Championship game they were supposed to come out with.
Oh, yeah.
Pac-Man, yeah. 4-player, in the same house. That'd be awesome.
We can go to the arcade and play that, just FYI.
So as CEO and president and owner of BrianSoft, the news clip just went out with the blurb, not everything has to be 3D. Your company just shut down, by the way. And I find that sad, because I agree with you, dude, 100%. And RickSoft has got your back, bro.
Well, listen, Tomware definitely has your back. I don't think it's necessarily a generational thing. I think there are a lot of, like, let's say kids who grew up on 3D and first-person shooters that would really like a very exquisitely done, sprite-based, you know, sort of hand-drawn game. But I might just be an idiot.
Yeah, dude, look how well, like, Minecraft and Terraria do. I mean, they're not graphic-heavy games by any means.
Let's buy the rights to, what do you want to do? Well, Konami own Contra. I'm down for Ikari Warriors. No one's done one of those in a while, if you guys are on board. Bring
melt
that back.
Melt my wax wings.
There are some great BL, X-Bla, what are we calling it these days? X-Bla, Ikari Warrior Clones.
Well, let's make it happen. XBLA, baby.
All right, well, that brings us up to number three, and I think we're kind of already on the subject, which is unnecessary multiplayer modes. This is confusing to me because I don't really know what they're talking about.
What they're talking about, I think, is you make a very kick-ass first-person shooter, and it has to have multiplayer, or people bitch that they didn't get a complete game.
Okay.
One glaring example of a game that I didn't feel needed a multiplayer online game, but one was attached to it anyway, and it's purported to not be horrible, but I never really spent much time with it, was Metal Gear Solid 4 for the PS3. They actually made like a Metal Gear Solid 4 online, like multiplayer addition to that. You know, the came as part of the game, and I just didn't see the point. Mainly with shooters, though, because everybody thinks that if it's a game involving guns and it's like remotely 3D, then I should be able to play online and like, you know, kick people's ass.
Right.
So I think that's what they mean there. Can you guys think of others?
Well, they were kind of saying, I think even in the example, Spec Ops: The Line.
Yeah.
That was a story game.
Actually, yeah, Spec Ops: The Line was an excellent story game.
It was like everybody was saying it was one of the best games of the year. It told a powerful story. End of story. You don't need to make it, oh, and before this guy went and did this thing, he ran around with his buddies blowing up shit.
That's the worst. It's the worst when they try to shoehorn the multiplayer into the like universe somehow, instead of just making it like a scratch game. You know, we're just doing this for fun. I never play that online, so I don't know, but any kind of a shoehorning of like the silly multiplayer into the universe, I just don't like.
Hey, well, you know what, you played that game and you finished it, and I think you played it more than once trying to get achievements.
Yeah,
so the fact that you never played the multiplayer online mode proves that it's unnecessary multiplayer mode.
Definitely. I was very satisfied with the first player. Yeah, and I would consider unnecessary. I would consider multiplayer to be unnecessary for that game, but I'm sure they would have received no end of criticism if they hadn't included it.
All right, so that brings us to number two.
Yeah.
Which we've locked kind of content. Already beat up. Yeah, locked content. We already talked about that one. We included it in with number four, I think it was.
Yeah, so we've sort of tread that ground already. I guess we'll just reiterate that locked content can really suck sometimes.
Yeah.
At least had the decency to make me download it. Don't put it on the frickin' disc.
Yeah, and actually, that's exactly what they talk about in their is not locked on the disc. If I pay full price for a game, I want the whole game. I don't want stuff locked on the disc. I can deal with downloadable content if I'm buying it, but do not lock it on the disc.
That's like buying a book with like chapters with the pages like glued together, and you have to use special glue to unlock to open them up or something.
No, it comes with like the last chapter's fucking invisible ink, and then you got to go back to the bookstore and buy this pen and scribble over the whole thing.
There you go. I'd rather just like buy the extra stuff in an extra book.
Right.
Ugh, irritating. Well, then that brings us to number one on the list, and this should be interesting. Needless tutorials, and they're talking here about needless in-game tutorials. We must have thoughts.
Well, their first blurb is, whatever happened to the instruction manual?
Yes. So what indeed?
So number one, needless tutorials, what ever happened to the instruction manual? I don't like to read. I don't mind tutorials, as long as they're skippable.
As long as they're skippable and there's a way for me to relearn the shit I didn't learn by paying attention to the tutorial.
Exactly.
Man, I don't mind reading. Sometimes it just depends how the tutorial is done and when. They get annoying. And then sometimes I'm just in such a rush to get past the scene, I don't remember, I don't retain the information, and I sometimes I feel like I go through entire games not really knowing how to properly play because the tutorials weren't effective.
And I also will say this, I don't mind a quick tutorial at the beginning of a game to get you started, but if I'm hours into a game and then all of a sudden you start trying to teach me shit, not gonna happen. That's bullcrap.
I'd rather just have like a press start to pull up the instruction booklet anytime so I can consult it for information I need. And if they want to show me little quick little videos about how to do it, that's cool too.
Have an instruction tutorial section that you can go to if you want to.
Like a glossary. It's there if you need it.
What do you think, Brian?
I'm going to go back to blaming the companies. I think this is lazy. I think this is... It's easier to design a tutorial before you start playing the game than it is to design a game that teaches you how to play it as you go along. Whatever happened to learning curves?
Yeah, you know, you're not... I don't know. I don't mind this. Like, the game starts, you know, press the left stick to move. Got it. I never need to hear about that again. Press X to jump. Press square to, you know, attack. Press this button to use your item. And they
kind of mind that stuff. Whatever happened to, I wonder what this fucking button does.
Well, they could just throw you in, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, that worked for, what, 20 years?
Well, they had instruction manuals. Even Atari had instruction manuals.
That's true. Admit, I never read the instruction manuals. I agree.
I never did either.
Yeah. Then, you know, if those simple tutorials buggy, you could just hit start, and then, like, it shows the controller, and, like, I like with the little tree, you know, the little branches coming off it, like, telling you what each button does. There you go. Right. Done.
Right.
Of course, some games do have more, you know, somewhat intricate play mechanics that I guess require a tutorial.
When they're saying needless, we're talking like a fucking driving game. Okay, it's Mario Kart style game. Why would you need a tutorial for that?
Yeah, yeah.
But then you got the other side of the coin, like, if I say that again, I'm going to smack my own teeth out. Like, I'm going to say Terraria. Or even Minecraft. Dude, there's no instructions. Nothing. Not a goddamn thing. It tells you how to move. Like, there's even the little tutorial, I think, is good, and you got a achievement for it, which is great. I love that. But, dude, I got to go and look on Wiki to try to figure shit out because I'm like, okay, well, I can collect mud blocks, but what can I do with a mud block? I don't know. But that's why I play the game for 14 hours at a stretch, because I'm not jumping on the computer and looking, I'm experimenting. You know what I mean? It's like there is that learning curve of fun, because you kind of get that, oh, well, I was able to kind of, I could plant this plant. Maybe I could grow trees here. Or, ooh, I found mushrooms. Maybe I can grow those. Or, hey, I have a furnace. If I throw ore into the furnace, it turns into a bar of metal. What happens if I throw a mud block in there? Holy shit, I just made ceramics. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
There is that cool awesomeness of just ingenuity and to figure it out yourself. But tutorials are handy sometimes, I think. So I don't know. I'm torn on it.
They need to be done right. If there's a way to tie them, if there's a way to weave them into the story. Like, I don't know. All right, soldier, press the X button to fire your gun. Like, oh, that really?
Yeah.
That seems like a little like, ham-handed to me. I don't know. I can see them having their place, but yeah. Just on its surface, something called a needless tutorial I could definitely dispense with. Put it that way.
Yep. So anytime they're mixing number one with number eight, so needless tutorials and patronizing dialogue, we're not having it here at the Ganza Cast.
And cutscenes consisting of needless tutorials and with patronizing dialogue, we're definitely not having.
That are unskippable.
And that are the only means to unlock locked content. What were you going to say, Brian? Sorry.
I said, God help you if it's split screen.
Yeah, and then to tie it all together with downloadable split screen locked on disc content, I would fucking lose my mind.
You can only get the key to unlock the locked content by posting through social media integration to at least 5 different social media sites.
And you can only get the password to post on those sites by playing the full tutorial with non-skippable cutscenes of downloadable content.
I think we just solved the used gaming price problem. We can just sell DLC tutorials.
I like it. I like it.
That way I can just start playing the damn game when I want to, and someone who wants to like actually figure it out isn't burdened with that. But anyone who wants the full experience can pay their extra $5.
Or you could do the other thing, and you can get the DLC code for the tutorials and instructions when you buy a game guide.
Hmm. There you go. That's a nice add-on. Or you could just sell games for free, but they're ad-sponsored. So, like, you're in a war, you're like in a war game, like, the blood, it's everywhere. That's because you need Snuggle to help get the stains out, and Snuggle the bear, like, you know, he's part of the, he's an uninterruptible cutscene. He comes walking on, and, like, then gives you instructions on how to use his softener to make the blood stains go away.
In a very patronizing manner.
That's because you've got blood on your fatigues, silly.
Good lord.
There you go. There's next gen, man. Ad-sponsored video gaming. Let's do it.
Well, I think it was a pretty good list. I don't really think there was too much on here. Maybe a little overlap with the locked content and the other what was the one that overlapped with that? Locked content and...
Oh, Season Pass.
And Season Pass. But other than that, I think it was a pretty strong list.
Yeah, I definitely... these could have been addressed during any generation, you know, any gaming generation. But I think now that we're actually at this like point where we're getting ready to see the next gen systems come out, this is a great time to revisit old habits and question whether or not they are worth carrying forward.
I agree. So if you want to check out some other cool lists, they got a whole crap load of them over there at gamingbolt.com. So go check them out. And I think that's going to do it for us. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Lots of really handy top 10 lists over there. And I'll tell you what you don't need a top 10 list for. You don't need a top you don't need a top 10 list of reasons to subscribe to the Nerdstravaganza podcast on iTunes. You also don't need more than one reason to write us a favorable review and give us a 5-star rating.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can head on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can download the show, stream the show, rate the show, or send us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Or you can like us on Facebook, enjoy our free page, and if you want the extra content, you have to do the DLC, join the group, and become a Nerdstravaganza insider.
So until next week, peace!
I didn't want to say peace because that's like your thing.